Change doesn't wait. It can storm in or creep quietly, unfolding in ways we notice years later. It stirs in labs, boardrooms, classrooms, streets, and communities where change actually happens. What moves you? A challenge? A vision? A chance to make business a force for good, even when things feel hard? I'm Gary Watts, and this is Moved, a podcast about change in motion and the people and ideas shaping it. Each episode, I sit down with someone working to make a difference, from tackling climate, equality, and sustainability, to leaders proving that business can do good and excel. We explore what first moved them, the obstacles they faced, and what drives them, and sometimes reflect on what moves us past doubts, beliefs, and habits towards impacting the world we want to see. This is Moved. Today, I'm joined by Jill Poet, a social entrepreneur who spent more than 15 years championing microbusinesses and ethical practices. Jill co-founded the Organisation for Responsible Businesses, which she and her husband later gifted to its members, an example of their values. Under her leadership, Orb developed the Responsible Business Standard, an ESG certification for micro and small enterprises, and is validated by the Anglia Ruskin University. They also developed the Social Value Community Certification. Jill's the author of It Really Is Just Good Business, which is a guide to running responsible ventures, and she serves on the steering group for the UK Micro Business Alliance. I first met Jill earlier this year when launching my own business and quickly realised she's an incredible guide for anyone starting out or wanting to do things the right way. Jill, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Gary. It's lovely to be here and thank you so much for that lovely introduction.
You're welcome. It's lovely to see you. We only met back in March this year, wasn't it?
I know, yeah, and it was very early stage of your business. And I know when just looking at your front page, I thought, oh, good, you know, this looks great. I do hope Gary joins us and becomes one of our board members.
Yeah, which I did. I did become a member. And then a few months later, here we are speaking to
you. Yeah, definitely.
Still can have you as a first guest.
And that's great. And it's good to see you on your journey and to support that.
Thank you very much. A really good place to start would be hearing a little bit more about you and the original inspiration behind starting Orb.
Yes, absolutely. This has got, in a sense, little relationship to my background. My background is actually management accountancy, but I didn't like working in the corporate world. So I'd spent 40 years working with, as, or for small businesses. And when you're working in that situation with a small business, you're not just number crunching, you're HR, project management, health and safety, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I gleaned a whole load of experience over those 40 years. I'd work with different types, different sectors of small businesses, micro and small businesses. Very passionate about small businesses. Passionate about seeing them thriving, not necessarily growing, because it's not right for every small business to grow. Some just want to stay on their own or with a couple of people. But I'm particularly passionate about the potential small businesses have to make a positive societal and environmental impact. So if we think of around 2008 time, there was an awful lot of talk about corporate social responsibility. And I'd got another business that time, something very different that was about health and well-being and taking responsibility for looking after yourself. It was a project my husband and I launched because, for personal reasons, we needed to launch a project. And we'd incorporated that as a CIC. And I was going to meetings where there was this talk about social enterprise, corporate social responsibility, but it was all very, very corporate. And with my small business hat on, I thought, well, what's happening in the small business world? And when we did a bit of research, it was very clear that actually not much. There was a little tiny pocket here and there, but really in the general scheme of things, there was not much talk about engaging small businesses in that agenda. So as you do, we thought we need to do something about that. So that was the driver to launch the Organisation for Responsible Businesses. But interestingly, because of my business background, we always took the approach that, yeah, we need to get businesses to care about people, to care about the environment in that broadest sense with both those topics. But guess what? They also need to be efficient. They need to be transparent. They need to know and preferably exceed legislation. So our approach was what one might now call ESG than CSR. It was just, ESG wasn't even mainstream, but it was just naturally our approach that we put it all together. We believe, and it's people that know me well will hear me jumping up and down talking about we've got to take a holistic approach to this agenda. Stop targeting individual agendas and isolating them as add-ons, because it's not going to work while we're doing that. So that was the driver, and here we are today.
What was the gap you saw in terms of what the specific needs are of micro businesses and small businesses versus what the CSR movement was providing?
I would say it's still very much the case today that a lot of small businesses are working from a do no harm basis. They're decent people, not doing anything wrong, but not necessarily proactively thinking, how can I make a positive change? How can I look after my people a bit better? How can I get involved in supporting the local community? How can I reduce my environmental impact, and not just carbon, but the whole broader aspect of, obviously carbon is important, but also waste, pollution, biodiversity. And at that time, and I can remember it so clearly, when I was, we launched in 2010. And when I was talking to small businesses then about caring about people, caring about the environment, probably 9 times out of 10, I would get a frown, a sort of what's that got to do look. And then the response was, oh, we recycle, as if that was it. And the irony is, they probably weren't even recycling properly. I'm pleased to say that it's come an awful long way since then, but we've still got a lot of work to do. And it is just nudging people to get them on the first rung of the ladder. And a lot of the problem that we see is that the noise, the language, is actually having the adverse effect. It's big things. We've got to do everything now. We've got to get to net zero now. You've got to go out and get an electric car and da da da. And actually, it's the wrong messaging, because what you actually need is to get businesses to understand the small steps that they can make that's actually going to be beneficial for their business and get them on the rung of the ladder. They've got to be authentic. We hate box ticking exercises. A little bit of nudging doesn't do any harm. So you get them on the ladder, and they start to realize that, hey, this stuff is good. I feel good about doing it. My people feel good about doing it. It's good for our reputation. And then you can ramp it up. But it's about bringing them in, engaging them in the first place. So CSR in the corporate world was often very much a tick box exercise. Sadly, ESG is still now often a tick box exercise in the corporate world. But when you're looking at small businesses, if they bring that into their business authentically, it is so powerful, so powerful. And of course, you mentioned the UN SDGs, and what we're talking about is very much aligned with that. And it's quite interesting, because if we look at those, actually, there's only a few that are very directly related to the environment. So if we want sustainable development, we need to look at all of those. And it starts, I think the very first one is no hunger. And we might look at that and business people and think, well, I can't do anything about that. But actually, that's not true. You've probably got food banks just around the corner to you, Can you support those? We've got a lot of hungry people in the UK, which is appalling, but it is where it is. So that's just an example. It's very easy to look at those and think they're not relevant to me or my business. But we're not islands as business people. We are part of, you know, our community and this country. And the negative social and environmental things that are happening will affect our business either directly or indirectly. So to actually detach ourselves from it and say, oh, I'm just running my business, that stuff got nothing to do with me, that's what we need to change.
You talk about a powerful thing, because the as small as these businesses are, or sometimes micro businesses, they actually represent a huge portion of the number of businesses in the UK. I think it was 95%. I think it was a stat on the Orb website, actually.
It is, Gary, and it's one of the things that people don't realise. And I have to say, I think the government is, and not just this government, it's not a political statement, but all governments have always been very poor acknowledging the power of micro business, the importance of micro businesses. They tend to, all of them, take the approach that unless they have 10 or more employees, which moves them to small rather than micro, or they are potentially fast track, then they're not really worthy of support, which is crazy. Because just as you say, 95% of all private businesses in the UK are micro businesses with 0 to 9 employees. And they're government stats. They're not stats that we've made up. They are government stats that they change every year. And I was talking about small steps earlier. If each of those just takes a small step, you multiply that by over 5 million businesses. Mm. And that impact is potentially huge. You add to that those businesses, if they have got a few employees, they're nearly always closer to those employees, so they'll engage with them. They're closer to their local community. So the ripple effect of making those changes goes out far and wide. So it is so strong and so important. But it's got to be authentic. Sadly, I've seen some initiatives coming from various directions that are very well intended, but they take a tick box approach, and that actually can end up having a negative impact, because people will jump on the bandwagon, and then it just dilutes the reality of the people that are doing the good things. I mean, as you know, you've done it. We have a 3-stage process for our membership. So there's a little questionnaire and a pledge. And we do have a lot of businesses that will go through that questionnaire and just tick all the right boxes and make the pledge. They're ready to pay their money. But as you know, we then have, we look at websites, LinkedIn, companies, house, see if that tells us anything. And then we'll have a one-to-one interview. And that's really important to gauge the authenticity and make sure that core values are aligned. And quite often with those people that have gone through the questionnaire and the pledge, we can actually see that clearly it's a marketing person that's done that. You know, this person doesn't even know how many employees the company has. So you think of other organisations that only have that sort of process in place, it's damaging, because they're not going to have the right people that are shown as being good businesses.
Mm. Mm. So 15 years ago now that you launched this, since you'd seen something that was not there, which you felt needed to be there, how was it initially received?
Oh, it was tough. It was so tough. And over the last couple of years, I've seen a few business people, quite experienced business people, that have said to me, you know, when you launched, I thought you were mad. I thought no one's going to be interested in that. And now everyone is talking about it. You were so far ahead of the field. And we were far ahead of the field. I mean, you think, A, it was an agenda that wasn't on most people's mindset in any shape or form. There were exceptions, of course, but for the majority, it just wasn't there. And of course, it was also just after the crash, there were still the repercussions of that financial crash. So the membership, it was quite hard to get traction. And we launched the certification a year later. So if the membership was tough, the certification was even harder, because it's a very, very robust evidence-based certification. So we did have a really, really tough time, and we came very, very close to throwing in the towel, very close. I think there was a little bit of divine intervention there, to be honest.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Like, what was the kind of the toughest point, I guess, you're touching on?
Yeah, it was a very emotional time. Excuse me if I get emotional again. It was the year we launched, and the year we launched was the year of my 60th birthday. So anyone can quickly work out that I'm quite ancient, but I'm still working very hard. I'm still a full-time CEO. Anyway, it was the year of my 60th birthday. And because we'd got financial agreements in place with the bank, or at least we thought we had, we'd got some initial money, development money, and then there were meant to be tranches following that once we'd launched. And they changed their mind. And said, no, you're not having that. Big business plan that was submitted, and they just, that was our RBS, and many people will be aware that RBS was pulled through the coals many years later for how they treated small businesses at the time. Anyway, very quickly, because naturally we'd got this business plan in place, everything in terms of finance we thought was in place, ready to draw down when we were ready. So we'd made commitments. And we needed that money to bring in a team to develop. So very quickly, it started unraveling. And as you do as a business person that's passionate about what you're doing, we started to top it up with credit cards and et cetera, et cetera. And we got into financial problems quite quickly. So come my birthday, or what, 8 months later, it was looking pretty grim. And I didn't know how we could get out of it. And my birthday happened to be a bank holiday Monday. Mike couldn't really get me. He didn't know just how bad it was, because, you know, that's my ball dealing with. You know, it was bad. And he couldn't really do much for my 60th birthday. And I'm not a person that wants stuff, but, you know, I worked hard, and I thought, you know, a little bit of celebration, something nice would be good. So I was feeling a bit sorry for myself. We had a lunch on the Monday with the family just in a local pub. They didn't know what the situation was. So come the Tuesday morning, when I was back at work, by that time I was feeling really, really sorry for myself. And at that point, Mike and I, we'd worked from home offices all the time, but we had separate offices. There was a land in between us. And I sat down at my desk feeling sorry for myself on the Tuesday morning after my 60th birthday. And I thought, I just cannot see how we are going to get out of this. Obviously, there was already a loan in place, and we'd put a house on the line for that. And I thought, you know, we're just going to have to sell the house and probably move into a caravan and, you know, whatever. I knew whatever I said, Mike would support me. So I was sitting there crying. And when I cry, I get very red-faced, red-eyed very, very quickly. So I went to go into his room next door. And as I walked out on the landing, you'd see the door just behind me. As I walked out onto the landing, he came out of his room. It's a split second, and this is the important thing, that split second, with his head down, and he said, didn't look at me. If he'd have looked, it would have been game over. He'd have known there was a problem. Head down, he said, I don't know what's wrong. I feel really, really ill. I'm going to go and have a lay down. So I said, all right, love, you go and have a lay down. I hope you feel all right in a little while. And I came back in my desk, sat down, and I thought, someone up there is saying, oh, no, you're not. You're just going to get on with this. And so we did. You know, 15 years later, we're still here. It has been tough. Mike didn't even know that story for about 18 months until we'd got over the worst of it.
Yeah.
There were only a few people that I shared it with at that time. So it was, but there's a double edge to that. I do say to people, if you are passionate about something, because I was 60, it did mean I was able to apply for pension credit to get a little bit of support, so we could manage to live. Clearly, not everyone's in that position. And I do say to people, if you're passionate about something, don't give up at the first hurdle. You try and work through it. There's sometimes solutions, sometimes you might have to go through a pain point. But the flip side of that is you also have to be conscious of your commitments. Clearly, I hadn't got young children living at home. We had still got a mortgage in. But if you've got those commitments, your family's got to come first. You've got to be able to, feed you and your family and have somewhere to live. So sometimes, even though you have got a purpose, you have to make very hard decisions.
It's such a moving story. It sounds like you really hit a wall, and it was very much showing on your face. And Mike, your husband, your co-founder, as soon as he saw that, that would have been it, really. But he wasn't meant to see you for that moment. And
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It wasn't meant to be. We were effectively told, I think. I mean, I'm not a particularly spiritual person, to be fair. But I've always just felt that there was a message there that this is something you've got to do. You're passionate about it and you've got to carry it through. So we're still carrying it on.
Yeah, well, it's for the benefit of the UK business community that it is still going. So 15 years later, and yeah, so you're 75 now and still leading the business as CEO, so working very hard, as you mentioned at the beginning. Can you tell us a little bit about the size of the community now and what the community looks like and those real successes that have come?
Yeah, it's about 250 at the moment of small businesses right the way across the UK. Our membership ratios pretty much reflect those small business statistics. So, by far the biggest majority are the sole proprietors and micro businesses, which we're particularly passionate about. Then we've got the small that are the 49 to sorry. The 10 to 49 category. And then we've got just a few medium-sized businesses as well. And they come from lots and lots of different sectors. Large percentage are service-based. And that's really because it's easier to make the connection with those people. People in retail and manufacturing don't tend to be on LinkedIn or go to events and things like that. But it is about being part of that community. And it is tough for not just small businesses, but it is particularly tough for small businesses. And we often get the feedback that being part of the community, just getting the newsletters, it's a reminder what their purpose is and help. Give them support and strength, just emotionally, if that makes sense. We're not consultants, so our role isn't to keep telling people you've got to do this, you've got to do that. There'll be drip feeds and reminders and talking about our purpose. And there's been a lot of people, particularly some of the startups that have come on board with us, that we've had fantastic testimonials in terms of how being a member at that startup stage has helped them. If you look at our purpose in our Articles of Association, there are two sort of distinct sides to that. So one part is getting that messaging out in general that, every single business should be thinking about this. So just drip feeding that messaging. The other side of that is to promote and support our members. So we do that in a lot of different ways. And particularly with the startups, we can get a lot of messaging out about, the particular community and what they're doing and share their social media.
Fabulous. And then when Orb was around 12 years old, so about 3 years ago now, you gifted Orb to its members. Can you tell me a little bit more about that decision?
It was important to us to protect the legacy of the company. There were a few people that had contacted us obviously realizing that I was getting a lot older and might be ready to retire, how mistaken they were, that were interested in getting involved. But it was very clear that in each case, they were interested in using our reputation and our platforms to sell marketing, not marketing, sorry, training and workshops and things like that, but with a focus on bigger businesses. Because without question, that's where the money is. You know, it's very challenging to make a viable company when you're aiming at those tiny, tiny businesses. And there's nothing wrong with that per se, but that's not what our purpose was. Our purpose has always been this drive and that small business focus. And whilst we could have made sure at that point we were a CIC limited by shares, so while we could have made sure that whoever we sold it to were doing the right things, it didn't protect the legacy for long term. And to be honest, the CIC gives absolutely no protection in any shape or form. I do have a bit of a love-hate relationship with social enterprise, but that's another topic. So we decided that we would set up a new company, limited by guarantee with not-for-profit articles of association. We transferred the existing company across to it, lock, stock and barrel. So from the outside, it didn't look any different at all. It was just that structure underneath. And simultaneously gifted it to the membership. Now, the structure of that company, because the members own it, is that legally, it's not just something we put in the articles, but legally, because it is a member-owned company, all our members have a right to vote, and 75% of those members would have to agree to any changes for our articles of association to be changed. So that's given us the protection that we want, because we've written into our articles of association our purpose. Mm-hmm. And we've even included that three-stage process. That three-stage process is written into our articles of association. And I've never actually seen anyone write any processes in their articles of association. I'm not saying no one has ever done it, but I've never seen it before. So I didn't even know if Companies House would accept it, because I wrote the articles to save money, because we haven't got loads of money. but they did accept it first time, no problem. So we now have a board of directors. I'm still the CEO, so I'm still the only employed employee, but I'm not actually employed because I don't get paid. So it's still me driving it, but supported by the board of directors. And we also have a member council that sits between the board and the membership, just to make sure that there's communication running both ways. We need to strengthen that member council. So that might be something that you might want to think about joining.
And then can you tell me a little bit about the book that you wrote?
Yes.
Yeah, I need to buy that book.
Actually, I think I need to gift that to you. I will gift you a Kindle copy of that as part of the membership. So, yeah, it's I think one of the important, I can write, but I'm not the best writer in the world. But I write from the heart, and anyone reading my book will say it sounds like you talking to us. And it's about, well, it's what it says on the tin, really. It really is just good business. The art of operating an ethical, responsible and profitable business. And what we're saying is actually, historically, these two things have been, you can either be one of these nice, soft, fluffy businesses that does all this nice stuff with people and the environment, or you can be a proper business and earn a profit. And actually, it's not like that at all, especially in today's society. In reality, you can be more profitable and sustainable if you authentically adapt all the things that we are talking about. It's talking about all those things. Most of it is that, you know, the heart and soul of it, being authentic. There is some controversial bits in there. I talk about social enterprise. And actually, I do think social enterprise is now past its sell-by date. It's done an awful lot to create that awareness of making a positive impact in the world. But I think now, by separating social enterprise from normal business, is becoming an injustice. People are label hunting. They're doing that tick box exercise that I spoke about. And yet we have a lot of businesses that aren't social enterprises that are doing really, really good things, and they're not getting the appreciation that they should do. So. Yeah.
So it should almost be core regardless. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's it's quite a substantial book, but it's a very, very easy read. There's lots of real life examples of the way small businesses are operating. Mm. Lots of our members, well, mostly our members, we've got some examples of bigger businesses that have started their business with that culture and carried it forward, which is sometimes where it all falls apart as businesses get bigger, because the CEO becomes more removed, or because there's investors, or they're not taking care who they bring in, they're not giving the training to the middle management. All these things can potentially negate the values that the founder started with, and not carry that through. Hmm.
So it's a world that's very fast moving, and there seems to be, well, there's always lots of uncertainty. Maybe it feels like now more than ever. Sometimes people can feel a little bit lost. What is something that you would like to leave for our listeners on the things that they can actually do to make a difference?
I think it's back to those small steps, Gary. There are the two things, I think. A, small steps. So don't get too sucked into you've got to do everything now and great, big things. We do as well as the certification. We've got a course that sits behind that. And it's very much about getting people to think about their business, to stop and look into it and take those small steps. But you don't realise until you take the time out of the different things that you can do. And of course, with a small business, it's one of the problems that we have. We don't often have the luxury of taking the time to work on our business rather than in it. But I think that's very important, not to assume that A, it's got nothing to do with you, and B, there's nothing that you can do, because you'll be surprised at the little things you can do and how good that can be to get your people involved and improve your reputation. So small things, just start with small things. But the other thing is to recognise that there is a lot of good in the world. There's lots of good things. So to try not to be too sucked into the scary stuff that's out there, because there is unquestionably a lot of scary stuff out there. But search out the good things, even if that's just a walk in nature and remembering what actually a lovely planet we have, and the creatures that we share in this world. We've got an awful lot to be thankful for. So, and acts of kindness. We've got a couple of our members where their specialism is kindness, and it's not saying to us, we all need to be kind, we know that. It's recognizing those little acts of kindness. And that might be just, you're walking down to shops and something, you smile at someone. There's that connection, a smile.
Yeah.
It's not much. But actually, that can make so much difference to someone's day, that recognition that we are human beings living on this planet, and a little bit of smile, a little bit of giving, a little bit of warmth is nice.
Yeah, you can actually make a big difference to people when they're on the receiving end of that. Yeah, lovely things to share, Jill. Thank you. 3 years from now, you've been even more successful. What happened?
My dream is to increase the income so that I can bring in a paid team, young people that have got the energy and insight to take this to the next level. For me to gradually step back, I can't say I'm ready to retire, so they might have to be put up with me being around for a bit, but certainly not working full-time. So that's my dream. At 3 years, I don't know. Will I want to retire in 3 years' time, or will I still be pottering on? Who knows? We don't know what's around the corner. But I would like to think that we have got a team in place. So in those 3 years, I suppose, apart from just growing the membership and the certification, which is the sort of natural organic development, what would be great if we could get some corporate support from somewhere that have got small businesses in their supply chain or their biggest customer who they want to support and recognise that being part of the Orb community, whether that's membership or going through the certification, is going to support their small businesses and help them in the supply chain. So, you know, that's what we'd like to see happening in the next 3 years, so that we can really take this to the next level.
Very good. Something tells me that in 15 years' time, Orb will be 30 and I'll be interviewing you still. If people want to find out more about Orb, where can they go?
If they go to the website,
yeah,
it's orbuk.org.uk.
Yeah. And I'll put that in the show notes as well. And to follow you?
Yeah, find me on LinkedIn. I'm very easy to find. Just search for Jill Poet with a J, and that's Poet. And that's just me.
Fabulous. Jill, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's actually quite meaningful for me, with having just met you about 6 months ago when I was starting out, and to be able to have this conversation now. I've really appreciated it. I'm looking forward to putting this episode out there.
Thank you, Gary. It's been an absolute pleasure to join you on the show today. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. If you enjoyed this episode, hit subscribe and tell others about it. I'm Gary Watts. Thanks for listening to Moved.